Hi, I'm Luke, and I'm the founding partner of the Mission Wealth Management Group at UBS, where we work with entrepreneurs of growth companies. I have always had a deep level of respect for entrepreneurs, how they have had such bold ideas, risked everything to see it through. For the better part of the past 20 years, I have made it my mission to meet, learn from, and work with passionate entrepreneurs, and have had a blast doing so. The purpose of this podcast is to showcase various entrepreneurs who have given me inspiration, allowing us to peek inside their minds and to learn what has caused them to create these businesses, share the highs and lows they've experienced, and learn where they draw their inspiration. Welcome to Entrepreneurial Insights with Luke Irvin at UBS. Today we have the distinct pleasure of having David Brickley from STN Digital, a social media marketing agency. He's the CEO and owner. So David, thank you for joining us today.
Hey, thank you for having me on, man. I'm excited. Let's talk some stuff.
All right. First, if you could, just share with our listeners a little bit about STN and what you guys do there.
Yeah, so STN, we're a social first marketing agency. We work with a lot of large brands, so sports teams, entertainment networks, large brands like Nike and Amazon, and essentially anything really under the digital marketing umbrella. So that includes full social media management, paid media, analytics, on-site activations, branding, commercial development, kind of you name it. Like I said, anything underneath like that marketing umbrella, we do. And we've been asked, as you can imagine, as social and digital becomes more important, rather than social kind of being like an add-on to a normal marketing agency, people are now asking us like, hey, can you just also do our entire marketing, tagline, narrative development, commercial development? We can kind of just add on the at a home or more of the traditional advertising on top of that. So, as we've grown, we started off just doing like cool social media graphics and a little bit of analytics and things like that. And obviously, as you know, the industry's grown so much that you really need a social first agency with really specific strategy and insight on a daily basis with some of these big brands. So that's kind of like in a nutshell what we do.
Okay, great. What was your journey up to that point? Like what led you to start STN Digital?
So when I was in college, I went to school to study journalism. So my goal was to be a sports broadcaster, be on SportsCenter, and or have my own like sports talk radio show. I was really passionate about sports as a failed athlete, I guess I could say. And so that was my ultimate goal. So I moved to LA out of college, worked at Fox Sports Radio for 3.5 years as a producer. My goal was to be on air and have my own show. So I was constantly kind of bugging the program director for my own opportunity. And in my opinion, I wasn't getting that opportunity quick enough. So I tried to take destiny in my own hands. Back in 2011, I started my own YouTube channel. And what I would do is I would wait till after hours at Fox Sports Radio Studios and pretty much host this quote unquote radio show on YouTube using the Fox Sports Radio facilities. It's starting to pick up some pretty good steam. Back then there wasn't a lot of original sports content on YouTube. So YouTube put us on the front page quite a bit. We got a lot of subscribers. And then I kind of had an idea. Kobe Bryant was one of my idols growing up as a child, grew up in the LA area. I had an idea. I wanted to shoot a weekly video called the Kobe Minute, which would talk about his off the court and on the court successes. And I would do it for free if he posted all over his social media and website. I pitched it to Kobe and his team and they said, let's do it. So, back in 2012, 2013, I was making these weekly videos for Kobe and those videos were getting 300, 400,000 views per week. And for me, that was the epiphany. Like, wait a second. I just kind of took destiny in my own hands. I just started working as my first ever client, like with my favorite athlete of all time. Why can't I work with other athletes, other brands, other sports teams and kind of make this a business? And yeah, back in April 2013, that was the start of STN.
That's great. And I was looking at the website and you do have a bunch of interesting clients. How have you gone about targeting them or are they reaching out to you guys?
I get this question a lot because I think a lot of people, because we work with large brands, Fortune 500 brands, NFL teams, NBA teams, large TV networks, and people always ask, like, how did you start working with the Green Bay Packers? Or how did you start working with Warner Media or whatever it may be? And the answer was, we just reached out. I mean, we really wanted to work with NFL and NBA teams originally, and we emailed all 32 NFL teams. 7 got back to us, 3 hopped on calls, and one of them went forward with the deal. So I think it was just this idea of not having a self-limiting belief, kind of questioning why not? Why can't we work with some of those big brands? I think a lot of companies, they start with lower brands and then hopefully one day we can prove ourselves to work with the bigger brands. We got lucky. We obviously had a decent portfolio. And then from there, the credibility, the snowball effect, once you work with one NFL team, all the other NFL teams, you know, kind of trust you, if you will. Once you work with one TV network, other TV networks know that you're legitimate and have credibility. So yeah, I would just say, you know, every time we've wanted to enter a new vertical, we've kind of gotten that first whale, if you will, to kind of establish that credibility in that first case study. And then it's a lot easier from there to go out to similar brands because they've kind of said, okay, if this brand trusted you, then we can trust you too.
Gotcha. So good old fashioned cold marketing, if you will, reaching out and pounding the pavement.
Yeah. And originally we worked almost primarily in sports and we wanted to move into entertainment. So we started working, you know, on award shows because award shows are very similar to live sports, but then the award shows led to TV shows. And then we wanted to get into more traditional brands like Clean and Clear, Nike, et cetera. We, through different avenues, were able to open up those verticals. And now, you know, if you work with Nike, then other brands are going to trust you like in that same apparel or footwear type of vertical. So it's not really rocket science, but it's like, hey, just go for it. And all of a sudden you have a portfolio. So if you want to join a network and you want to be on social media and you want to not pay anything, well, you are paying with your data. And that's kind of how they are able to have a revenue generating program. So like I said, I think it's moving so quickly. I definitely think that self-policing when it comes to like how are you using my data is probably not the way to go. I do think some type of like third party or someone that can help, you know, make sure that they stay in line when it comes to all the sensitive information they have about all of us. But again, I think I go back and forth on like the pros and cons. I think there's a ton of pros. There's also a lot of cons as well when it comes to, I guess, being disconnected. But yeah, it keeps it interesting, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's definitely a very fluid thing at this moment. Mm-hmm. And then another thing that maybe I'm not as social media savvy, but I've always gotten a kick out of is this idea of influencers, right? And I saw that that's something that you guys do. What is it that you do for these influencers? How much are they disrupting kind of the industry? If you could comment on that a little bit.
Well, listen, I think when you look at influencers, really all it is it's about reach and eyeballs. And if I'm a brand and I want to get in front of a certain demographic and you have 100,000 followers and most of them are in the 18 to 34 year old demo, and most of them are sports fans. Well, if I'm a new sports drink coming out, it'd be nice to be able to tap into your audience. Now, this is no different when Nike used Michael Jordan as their ambassador or their sponsored him to wear his shoes on TV, right? Because at the end of the day, so many people watched him on TV, so many people followed him that Nike's able to leverage those eyeballs and make sure people go out and buy Nikes. Influencers are really the same thing. If you're Kim Kardashian, Justin Bieber, what have you, even though you also may be a musician or what have you, you can monetize your audience because you have the ears of multiple people that trust you, trust your opinion. They want to know what you wear. They want to know what you eat. They want to know what you drink. So if you're a brand, you can really tap into that. So, you know, it really used to be set aside for large celebrities, large athletes were the only ones that it really made sense to tie your brand to. But now with social, I mean, there's people you don't even know about that get way more reach than some of the most famous people in the world. So yeah, from an influencer standpoint, again, it's really about marketing. Who's your demographic? And then where does that demographic live? Who do they follow? Who do they trust? And then how do you work with those people that they trust in order to get more credibility for your brand? So my personal opinion, I think it's a multi-billion dollar industry that we haven't even scratched the surface on how much money people can make based on monetizing their social audience, including sports teams, athletes, people that have a little bit of Q rating. They're not, in no way are they monetizing their audience the way they should be. The same way that NBC used to monetize Seinfeld because why? They had whatever, 25 million people watching every single Thursday. Mm-hmm. So they were able to monetize the commercials. The same thing. If you have a social media platform like Instagram and you have a million followers, you can monetize on that because you have a million eyeballs watching your content.
Gotcha. So do you work with the influencer or are you working with the brands that are trying to get in front of the influencers?
A little bit of both, but mostly it's the brand. So if we're working with a TV show and they really want to drum up some excitement for their upcoming premiere, we're going to look out and say, okay, who's your demo? Okay, we want to reach 18 to 34 year old people. We want to reach them in the LA market, what have you. And then we start looking for influencers that have a lot of that demographic following them and trusting them and then seeing if we can work with them. Now, the thing about influencers too is you want to make sure that your content is organic. You don't want to just slap an advertisement or a commercial on their Instagram feed because their audience is going to know that they're selling to them and it comes off across very salesy and just not organic and genuine. But if you can really partner with the creator and create a piece of content that their audience loves, but they just so happen to be talking about your brand or so happen to be inserting your brand, much like product placement has been doing for decades when it comes to movie or TV. That's really the way to do it, like in an authentic way. So that way they know that the audience knows they're not being sold to, and it's a genuine partnership that the influencer actually believes in. So
gotcha. And then switching gears a little bit, through your journey with STN, what were some of the biggest challenges that you faced getting the company up and running and to where it is today?
Good question. I think the biggest challenge is just really ensuring that you have the right processes and training and manuals and protocols. If I could do it all over again, I kind of wish I would do two things. One, I would have a very extensive training program for all my new employees very early on. Now, we figured that out through trial and error. I think like most companies, we used to like hire somebody, put them in the corner and say, hey, good luck, ask any questions that you have. Now we have like a full 2-week onboarding with multiple modules and videos they watch, and they get one-on-ones with every single employee in the company, and they really kind of ingratiate themselves into the culture. And that just makes for a much more healthy relationship. So if I could do it all over again, I think how do you service your clients? Like, what are the do's and don'ts? What are your core values of the company? How do you respond to emails? Like, how do you escalate things? Especially from an agency standpoint, it's so important to have those processes in place. So I think that part I would have done earlier. Then also core values. I think when you own a company, you start scaling, you start adding more employees, and you never really sit down and say, well, what does this company stand for? What is our why? What is our purpose? What's the do's and don'ts? Like, what's our core values as an organization? What do we hire and fire by? And I think I want to say 3 or 4 years into our company, I finally sat down and did those. And it's so amazing because it becomes like a self-policing program where other employees, like for us, it's like, you know, obviously respectful and positive and friendly and dependable. Some of these things that seem obvious, but we kind of have these, this is what you have to do to play, if you will, in this organization. And if somebody's not being dependable or somebody's not being positive, then their coworker can call them out on it. Their coworker can coach them and say, hey, I've noticed that you haven't been as dependable this week. Like, how can I help you get there? And there's just like a very healthy dialogue about like, hey, here's who we are and here's who we want to be when we show up every day. So those are the two things I think that once I did those two things, like I said, training, manuals, processes, and then also establish the core values, it just really, our company took off like a rocket ship because those foundational items were so set in place that then you can go be innovative and do bigger and better things.
Sure. And I'm guessing that really goes a long way to setting the culture of the business, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. And again, it's like the way we did the exercise originally was like, who are some of our favorite employees in the organization? What do we like about them? What about them do they do a good job of? And just kind of trying to mold, like, wouldn't it be great if we can add more people like Sally to the organization because she's so dependable and so friendly and so personable, or whatever those qualities you're looking for in your organization. And then you kind of start building out like, here's who we are, here's who we want to be. And it's not overnight, but over time, like for me, I'm kind of selfish in the fact I just want to go to work every day, love what I do and laugh and be around a bunch of positive, friendly people. So that was kind of my selfish endeavor. So I just started hiring a bunch of friendly, positive, very passionate people. And all of a sudden you're surrounded by 55 friendly, passionate, amazing people. So yeah, if you kind of set that goal or set that standard of what you want or what people need to do. And then some people will excuse themselves from the culture. Maybe they're not as positive, or maybe they're not, you know, want to be under the gun or be as dependable. That's fine. There's other organizations that they probably would fit in better. But anyways, it's just, it creates, to your point, an amazing culture for sure.
Mm-hmm. And so you mentioned you have 55 employees. Is that where you're at now?
Yeah, we're at 50 and we have quite a few open positions. So I think we'll be like between 50 and 60 here in the next couple of months. So yeah.
Gotcha. So if anyone out there is looking for a job.
We got a bunch of new jobs. Exactly.
and then I'm guessing most of your employees are kind of creative types, marketing types. Is that accurate?
We have a full production department as well. So that's more like your video, your on-site activations, commercials, et cetera. We have a creative team. We have our client services team, which is more the account managers for all of our different clients. We have our paid media analytics team, but every day we're trying to market to an audience, like increase engagement, be innovative with our content. So it's all kind of based on how we can continue to sell these brands.
Sure. So some of the challenges that you at least established or addressed were around the systems, the values, the culture. Okay.
Right.
Not necessarily the blocking and tackling of day-to-day starting a business. What about some of the successes that you've enjoyed through STN? Like, what were some of these kind of aha moments where you said, you know what, this is working, this is taking off, we've got a real business here?
I think one thing that I learned and I still practice to this day, we first started the company, we didn't actually try to sell right away. We actually reached out to our hopeful prospects and said, hey, do you mind if I pick your brain for a second? We think we have a business model here. We think it could be very useful to someone like you, but we just want to, you know, we respect your opinion. We'd love to just kind of get your thoughts on if you think we have any holes in this idea, what have you. So we actually reached out to a ton of NBA professional basketball teams in the early going. And again, didn't try to sell them. It was more of just a conversation. And by listening to them, we kind of like adjusted and evolved our business model overnight, really, based on hearing the same type of needs. And at the end of the day, it's like, what bottlenecks do you have? Where do you guys need help? Where do you wish you can be better at? And we kind of crafted the business model around those answers we received. And to this day, I mean, there's nothing better than grabbing a coffee or hopping on a call and just listening on these client calls, because they tell you, man, we really wish we had a better paid media partner. Interesting. Like, you guys need a paid media partner? We actually can help you with paid media. Oh, really? Is that right? And just kind of educating them on how you can help them more. But also, you start to hear the same thing over and over again, especially if you're talking to the same industry, of different problems or stresses or time management issues they're having. And if you can solve that pretty quickly, all of a sudden you become kind of the hero for them, because you can solve an issue that was really frustrating or stressful for them. So I think early on, that was kind of the aha, like, well, let us almost interview our core consumer, ask them what they want to get better at, what they struggle with, and then offer a solution for those struggles. And then all of a sudden, you're an amazing partner because you're making their life easier. So once we kind of figured that out early on, it's really been a practice we've every single day, every single week, every single month, when we hop on calls or when I even talk to colleagues in the space, just running ideas by them, getting their advice, picking their brain, and asking, again, where are some bottlenecks or areas that you guys wish you can show up better at, and then offering a service relatively quickly. And as a quick example, with COVID, obviously all these traditional marketing levers were pulled away almost overnight. So we had to move almost overnight and create more virtual events. So we started doing a lot of virtual premiere parties, a lot of virtual interviews and different like events that we can create for our partners, because all the on-sites like Comic-Con and Coachella and things like that were taken away from us, obviously. Mm-hmm. So in this industry, it's like, how quickly can you pivot and offer that solution? And if you can, you can be pretty darn successful, because nobody else is moving that quickly. And at the end of the day, the brand needs a ton of help.
Gotcha. So yeah, and I think every business owner can take away something from that about just soliciting feedback from clients, right? It reminds me of the, I don't know if you ever heard the venture capital adage where if you ask for money, you get advice. And if you ask for advice, you get money.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of truth to that, where if you just make yourself available or show some vulnerability, you know, ask for feedback, what are they looking for, what they need, it opens up the doors to.
Yeah. One thing business. I tell all my employees, like at the end of every phone call, we say, is there anything we could be doing to make your life easier? And whatever, maybe people think that's cheesy, but at the end of the day, it unlocks so many things. Like, you know, to be honest with you, like, I don't get in the office until 10 in the morning. So can you guys like hold on all like of your early emails and hit me up more after lunch? Or, you know, it may just be a simple thing like that. But all of a sudden, they open up, they tell you what they want, and then you just start giving them what they want, and they almost forget they told you. And you know what? David, I love how you guys wait till after lunch to email me, because it's so much easier for me, because I get everything off my plate. And they almost forget they shared that with you. And then you get the you know, gold star for being an amazing partner or what have you. So again, a silly example, but I do think just like consistently asking your clients like, hey, how can we be better? Hey, is there anything that we do that you wish we could do better? Or is there any other area that you guys are struggling with that you think we can help with? Implementing that into your client services, no matter what industry you work in, I think it's going to unlock a lot of amazing things, including like in your business, Luke, too, whether it be technology or maybe some issues with deposits or online checking, whatever it may be. If your customers are honest with you, you probably share that with your IT team or your developers, and you guys can create even more seamless user intuitive projects, which is awesome. So
absolutely. And backtracking a tiny bit, because you did mention the pandemic and needing to pivot. So obviously most of my conversations with clients and you know, just other entrepreneurs, business owners that I've been talking to, it's gone one of two ways, right? Either their business has suffered greatly or they've actually done better in this. And certainly more the tech-focused companies mm-hmm. are the ones that are doing well. But how has this pandemic helped or hurt your business? And then what things have you had to do to pivot?
Yeah, so, you know, it was a little scary at first because whatever it was on March 13th, I think, when the NBA kind of shut down their season, that was the cascading effect of, I think, the whole world shutting down. Obviously, it started in the sports with March Madness and the NBA, NHL canceling their season or suspending and all those different things. So for us, we had a handful of annual MLB contracts lined up. We had an activation at Coachella. We had a pop-up shop up in LA we were building. And overnight, all those things got suspended and kind of halted, which is, you know, kind of scary. So like I said earlier, we pivoted immediately and started creating best practice guides. We upped our virtual event game and said, hey, just so you know, I'm sure you guys are kind of scrambling internally, but we do have a solution for what's going on with COVID right now with these virtual events. And here's how it works. And here's how we can help you with your upcoming release or whatever it may be. And my team overall, just, I kind of told them, I said, I kind of felt like a wartime general, but I said, this virus is coming after our company. It's coming after our careers, coming after our livelihood. So we can choose to let that happen or we can fight like hell against it. So yeah, we pivoted immediately. We kind of became, everybody was just so paralyzed, I think, by the moment and so scared and just kind of didn't know what to do. By us kind of taking the time to build out those free best practice guides and like that free advice for not only our clients, but our entire industry, we kind of became super important to what people were doing. And long story short, we grew last year as a company 66% year over year and during COVID, which we're very proud of. And I'm just so grateful for, because like you mentioned, I have so many friends that worked in hospitality, worked in restaurants, and they were just decimated. I think for our industry, working in social, again, all the traditional marketing levers were pulled away, whether it be go conferences, billboards, these different things that people used to spend so much money on were not even an option or didn't make sense anymore. So a lot of brands looked inward. And I'll give you a quick anecdote. I talked to the CMO over at Jersey Mike's, and they have like Grubhub, I believe, which is kind of their delivery platform. Before COVID, 10% of their revenue accounted for was the Grubhub or the online delivery. Overnight, it went to 90% of their revenue.
Wow.
Without that technology or without that forward thinking of, hey, let's offer a solution for our customers, they would have been decimated as well. But they had that revenue generating platform that they can turn on overnight that kept them alive. So it kind of goes to show, like, if you invest in social and digital and technology, that you're able to kind of weather the storm in this situation. So yeah, I keep on saying, I think the digital revolution fast forwarded 5 years into the future. I think every brand is looking inward. And if you don't have a social media strategy, and if you don't have an ability to talk to your consumers online, you're probably going to be out of business in the next 5 to 10 years, unless you take that very seriously. So we, as you can imagine, we've got a lot of SOS calls recently, like, oh my goodness, we either didn't take it seriously before, or we're not taking it serious enough. Can you guys help us? And obviously we're more than happy to jump in. But that's what I noticed about this whole thing, is that really, I think every brand looked inward, like, what are we doing on digital? And what happens if this were to happen again? And we don't have our traditional levers. We got to make sure that we can keep on running business and not be decimated. So
sure. And then where do you personally draw inspiration, or and what words of wisdom that would you be able to offer to other entrepreneurs or aspiring business owners that might be tuning in?
Investing in culture and core values and investing in your team, it seems sometimes counterintuitive, because why are we doing all these team building events, and shouldn't we be working, and why are we doing early happy hours, and what's this mental health hour that somebody wants to do, and all these different things? I think so many people look at the X's and O's of this hour should be used to make me money. But ultimately, if you give back to your employees and create a healthy culture and kind of look out for them, they become way more efficient. They attract way better talent. And even when it comes to your social media and sharing what your culture is all about, people are raising their hand, begging to work for your company rather than you paying a recruiter, begging other people to work for you. So once we kind of unlock that, is making sure that everybody has a voice as well. You know, I think for me, one thing that's frustrating, I do think corporate America kind of silences their employees. And if you're an account manager, they say, how dare you raise your hand and say that a process is inefficient? You're not a VP at this company. You're not allowed to have a voice. And I think that should be totally the opposite. I mean, I just love the idea, and a great book that every owner should read, I think, is Radical Candor. If a process is inefficient, or there's distance between two employees, or there's a little bit of awkwardness, or somebody felt like you let them down in a pitch, or whatever it may be, having that like open dialogue, okay, here's how I feel. Like, you know, I know you didn't do it on purpose, but here's how I want to move forward, is so important, because I think it creates such a healthy culture, healthy communication, that radical candor. Again, like I said, people just start recruiting amazing people inward when you want new people. And then people just want to be a part of a company that cares about them, that their voice is heard, their opinion is valued, and all those different things. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing that, I guess, words of wisdom I would have is invest in your culture, invest in your core values, make sure you're constantly telling your employees the why, the purpose. And another book I read that changed my outlook was The Great Game of Business. And that was really about sharing your numbers with your employees, sharing your revenue, sharing your sales goals and targets, because it's hard to play the game unless there's a scoreboard, right? Mm. So once your employees know, like, hey, here's why we want to grow 2x year over year. Here's why we want to make $1 million this quarter. Here's why we want to open this new division of our company. Here's why it matters. People can get behind that. Then all of a sudden you have 50 plus people pulling, or maybe thousands of people pulling towards a given goal rather than the CEO or just the select amount of executives pulling against a goal. So yeah, once you tell your employees the why, like, here's why this is important, here's why I'm passionate about it, and here's how it's going to set us up for success, I really feel like you're able to run through mountains because you have an entire team that's like, I love that. That pumps me up. Let's kill it together.
That's a really great point. You don't really see that very much in closely held businesses or private businesses. Obviously in the public sector, those books are open for anybody, right? It's all public knowledge. Yep. But oftentimes we've seen that the business owner or the ownership team does hold those very close to the vest, right? Where sharing the vision, the numbers, the books, those kind of things can really get people, get employees aligned and have that feeling of ownership.
And I think the fear from a lot of executives is, well, what if I say that we made $1 million this quarter, then everybody comes in for a raise or what have you? It's like, well, again, if you're saying the why, like, listen, guys, like, we still need to keep a certain amount of cash available for a rainy day. We still like have I share with my team, like, here's what we pay in rent. Here's what our cost of goods sold are, like, all these different things. So start to teach them business a little bit, because they don't know, and they've never ran a business, so they don't really have any context. But once I say, hey, guys, I know we have some money in the bank or what have you, just so you know, like, it costs $12,000 for this building. Just so you know, all those snacks in the refrigerator, that costs, you know, $1,400 a month. And you you start kind of teaching them a little bit, like, here's how a business works. Here's all the different costs we have. Here's why it takes a lot to operate this beast. Then they start to realize, oh, okay, like, then I just don't look at a big number and assume, why don't you give me all that money? Obviously, it's for the greater good of the actual company to stay healthy. So, yeah, I've just found that the more information you share, the more excited the team gets. It makes you as an owner, like, awesome, because everybody's so excited when you hit a goal. So instead of you, like, in a dark room, just, like, pumped yourself, now there's, like, the entire organization is celebrating with you. So, yeah, it just feels like a more team environment. Like I said, if there's a scoreboard and you're down by two and you hit a game winner, you can all celebrate together rather than keeping the scoreboard in the dark and the team has no idea if they won or lost. So,
sure. I'm most intrigued there by the $1,400 in snacks a month. That's
exactly.
What kind of snacks are you talking about?
Invest in culture, man. Yeah. From Red Bull to coffee to protein bars, you know.
Invest in snacks. I like it. So what is next for yourself and for STN looking down the road?
Yeah, so I think two big things come to mind. I mean, I've been kind of screaming from the mountaintops for 10 years now how important social is and how people should have a strategy. And again, I think these Fortune 500 brands too are starting to realize, like, oh my goodness, like, if we don't get on TikTok and start talking to the Gen Z audience, we're going to totally miss out on the whole new generation, right? So I'm really excited because I think every brand is really starting to look inward and say, we got to talk to where everybody's at. I mean, at the end of the day, everybody under 70 years old has an iPhone, it feels like, at this point, and they all are on Facebook and Instagram, and this is where everybody lives. So if you want to connect with the consumer, you need to go where they are, and they are on social. So, you know, I'm excited for that. I think just to be more strategic, you know, social is not just posting a graphic and calling it a day, but it's about analyzing and seeing what your customers and followers like, and the call to action, and are they going to your website, and are they booking calls, or are they buying product? Like, just that, it's really becoming like a data science, if you will, of, you know, what works, what doesn't, and how you can evolve that. So that's one thing. And then another thing I'm really, really excited about is just like you asked earlier, was about influencers. Like I said, I think athletes and celebrities in general, they're just not properly monetizing their audience in any type of way. And I think billions of dollars are being left on the table every single year from sports teams and athletes and celebrities. If you have 19 million followers and you're not making any money on your social media, that's pretty silly, because you're literally getting more eyeballs than most television networks do on a daily basis. Mm-hmm. And they're obviously monetizing very, very well with their commercials. So that's one area that I'm really excited to dig into, because I think we can really help with our social strategy and how we know social, go to help these individual celebrities, athletes, et cetera. Just make sure they have a second revenue stream when it comes to their social audience. So those are two things I'm really excited for the future.
And before we wrap up here, how can people get a hold of you or STN to learn more or see what you guys are up to?
So stndigital.com or stn.digital for our website. My personal handles are David J. Brickley. I'm on Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, as you can imagine, all TikTok, the whole deal. So if you search David Brickley on Google, it'll probably pull up most of my social networks. But yeah, would love to chat, or always love to network with as many people as I can and share stories and kind of learn from each other. So anybody out there that would love to meet up, would love to chat.
Excellent. And then I'm guessing you're still a pretty big Laker fan.
Yes, I'm a diehard Laker fan. It's been difficult with a lot of injuries this year. However, I think if we have LeBron, Anthony Davis, Andre Drummond all healthy going into the playoffs, I like our chances. However, the Brooklyn Nets have a heck of a team that they're assembling as well. So I got Lakers and Nets. Let's go Lakers in seven.
That's good. Well, for the NBA Finals. I must apologize. I'm a Atlanta Hawks fan, and I think we were responsible for LeBron getting hurt.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I apologize to you. I mean, it's been tough being a Hawks fan the last couple decades.
The last 41 years of my life.
But, yeah, exactly. Since Dominique, it's been down. I'm just kidding.
But I think it was a clean play. I've heard some people saying that it wasn't a clean play, but it looks like he just fell on his ankle there.
But
he'll be back. I'm a big LeBron fan and really excited to see Space Jam. That's what I'm.
Yeah, that'll be fun too. Yeah. That's a nostalgic play right there. I love it.
Great. Well, David, we could leave it there.
Yeah.
But thank you so much. This has been really eye opening. I've especially really love hearing your feedback on just the social media landscape. I find that a fascinating topic. Mm-hmm. I can see both sides of it, influencers, and just how my main takeaways here is your laser focus on the core values of the business or the company and taking care of the employees, that only can work out well. And especially this idea of kind of opening up the kimono, if you will, with the books and the goals of the company.
Yeah. Like I said, if anybody, I would just recommend any business owner just to like consider it. Like I said, The Great Game of Business is a great book because it shows you a story of, once those numbers were shared, how much it grew the company and how much buy-in it got from all the people. And it just breaks it down. And I was kind of against it, to be honest. And I was hush-hush about numbers, and I didn't let my employees see the final slide of decks that talked about the pricing. And looking back at it, I just felt, you kind of shake your head, it's kind of silly, because once we did open those numbers up, it created such an amazing team atmosphere that could never go back. So this, it's good that anybody, if they're considering it, to check it out for sure.
Yeah, no, I think that's a great idea. Well, yeah. David, thank you so much for joining us.
Of course, man.
Hopefully we can have you back here and hear more about your future successes.
Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thanks so much.
You got it. Have a great day.
Interesting conversation today. David and STN are really positioned well with social media marketing taking massive amounts of market share from traditional marketing and advertising mediums. I particularly enjoyed his take on the state of social media. Obviously, it's a very polarizing subject. It's a very nascent technology still, after a decade or so. But I think when David called for potentially more regulation within social media, this isn't different than a lot of the leaders of these social media companies. Mark Zuckerberg at Facebook has come out and said that he thinks some regulation could be better. They're asking for help in terms of trying to get the idea of social media and the execution of social media to be safe to all users, but also a thriving business. I also enjoyed his take on influencers. I never really thought of the Michael Jordan, for instance, with Nike being an influencer. So this isn't really anything, a new idea, but I do think it's broadening the scope of marketing from just the big name celebrities, allowing pretty much anyone to try their hand at being a marketing presence. From a business perspective,
I really enjoyed the idea of the systems, values, and cultures driving his business. The systems, the manuals, and the training, and the processes, that's certainly important. On previous episodes, we've discussed the idea of a business not really being a business until you're able to step away and have the business thrive without you there. Those systems are certainly integral in that endeavor, right? For new employees, new hires to come in, they'll learn the ropes. For existing employees, it helps them stay on track. And for clients and customers and investors and things like that, it ensures that there's some uniformity there. The values and cultures, that's something different. That's one of the benefits of being a business owner, owning the business, is you can dictate what those are, the values and the cultures. And if someone or something doesn't meet those objectives, you can go a different direction, right? And I particularly like the idea of transparency when it comes to the books. This is something, as I mentioned on our conversation, is widely available in the public company space, right? You can go back and check to look at the books for a company like Microsoft, what it did last year, last quarter. In the private company space, things are much more opaque. So employees might not fully understand what they're doing and if what impact they're making on the business. I've heard this from several clients that they want to be more forthright and share these their goals and the books with the employees. They have a feeling that there might be some distrust or anything like that, that if they might feel that all the retained earnings in the business are the business owner's income, and maybe they deserve a raise if business owner's taking home that much. Now, as most business owners listening to this know, oftentimes, especially when you're in the newer formation or in the growth stage, you're probably not taking that much out of the business. So a lot of times some of your higher paid employees might be earning more than you do. So that idea of transparency, oftentimes I think that the public companies have a lot to learn from the private companies. But in this case, I think this is one area where privately held or closely held businesses can learn from the public space. And this brings to mind a quote from the Dalai Lama that says, "A lack of transparency results in distrust and a deep sense of insecurity." Thanks for joining us on Entrepreneurial Insights. If you have enjoyed this, please rate and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. Email us at missionwealth@ubs.com with comments or suggestions. Visit our website at ubs.com/team/missionwealth, or connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter at Luke S.W. Irvin. You've been listening to Entrepreneurial Insights with Luke Irvin at UBS.